Grab a seat as quick as you can and we'll get underway. I usually run over with this lecture and I've added one more slide, so we're going to get underway very promptly today. So at the end of last time, you'll remember that I introduced you to the idea of resonant tubes and the difference between a sound source and a sound filter. So we remember that I was putting energy into these tubes and they were resonating, and I pointed out at the end that in a human vocal tract that's exactly what we have here. We have some kind of resonant tube. So today I'm going to sort of link all that together, quick as you can, link all that together and show you what's going on when we are doing what I'm doing now, which is generating human language using my physiology, shaking the air and impinging upon your ears. Okay, so this is a diagram you'll see many times here. It's very famous, very old. It's known as the speech chain, and it's basically pointing out that when we are speaking and listening, it is not about mouths and ears, it's about brains communicating with brains. Okay, so the essential idea is that inside this amazing structure here, there's some kind of conceptual representation of something you want to do, something you want to achieve, some message you want to pass, you want to get somebody to do something for you, and that representation at a very high semantic level somehow has to be converted into a signal that somebody will respond to. Now, you could just convert it into physical movement and give them a shove. That'll tell them that you want something done. But we have this very sophisticated language-based communication system, which is much more refined than just pushing and shoving. So we have the brain in the speaker, which is controlling the physiology, in this case the vocal articulators. That generates sound, which, as we saw last week, propagates through a medium, ideally through the air at a certain speed. That impinges upon the senses, in this case the ears of the listener, and then some process transduces the information that arrives at the ear into electrical activity in the brain. So actually these two lectures, this one is all about the first part and the second lecture is all about the second part. And all the way through I'm going to be showing you how we model some of this stuff with, of course, some exercises in PD. Hope you're all up and running on PD as of yesterday's lab. Okay, so here we're going to concentrate on this bit. What's going on here? Well, this part of your anatomy did not evolve to speak. It evolved for all kinds of other reasons, for much more basic and fundamental reasons. This is the mechanism that you use for breathing, right? It's also the mechanism you use for eating. Actually, that in some animals is are separated. It's rather weird that in the mammalian system we're using one kind of cavity to deal with breathing and eating, which is why it's possible to get the two mixed up and you can choke, which is not very good at all. But that's the reality. So we have an apparatus designed for breathing, eating, vocalizing, just making noises at all. Many animals vocalize, can cry out and interact with their neighbors, either similar species or different species by way of warning. But then human beings seem to have evolved this rather special usage, which is actually speaking, using human language with this apparatus. Okay, so we've got the anatomical diagram. I guess I didn't say, but that's a slice through somebody facing that way. And we can then break that down scientifically, if you like, into some of the core components. So the main source of energy is the lungs. We have to put energy into the system, so we breathe in and then we breathe out. And push air through the system. The part that is the sound source, which we talked about last week, is essentially here, the larynx. And in here we've got a structure, which I'm going to talk about in a minute, the vocal cords, which are generating the main vocal sounds that we hear. The pharynx is the part of the anatomy which is just above that, right at the back of the throat. And then we have an interesting split, which you may or may not appreciate, because you have a hole at the back of your vocal tract which allows air up through into the nasal cavity, into the nose. So we've got an oral cavity, which is this part here where you have your tongue, and the nasal cavity. And you can open and close the entrance to that nasal cavity using something right at the back of the of your throat, which is called the velum. And you can raise and lower the velum, and you can cause air to come out of your nose or not. Now, you might think, well, their nose is hardly important in speaking, but if somebody's talking with their nose blocked or got a horrible cold, you appreciate that it actually completely changes the timbre, the sound of the voice. Why? Because it's a tube. The oral cavity is a tube, the nasal cavity is a tube, and as we saw last week, tubes resonate and they are giving extra dimensions to the sound. Okay, so in the oral cavity, this is actually where all the action is going on. And we have the tongue, which is a muscular hydrostat. It's an incredibly dexterous muscle, one of the most complex muscles in the human body. And your tongue is capable of jumping around all over the place. And what's it doing? It's changing the shape of the tube. Okay, so when I was doing this, can't do it today, doing that last week, I was actually positioning my tongue so I had a nice big open tube, because I was approximating my simple tubes. But when you're speaking, your tongue is all over the place and it's changing the shape of the tube, therefore it's changing the resonances, and that is how you shape the different sounds in language. We're going to go into that in a lot more detail. These are called the articulators. So the second one down you can see is the lips. The lips also play a role. Lips are opening and closing, causing the airflow to stop or start. If you close your lips, then you can have airflow coming out through the nose, of course, unless you've got the velum up, in which case no air flows at all. But the lips are also an incredibly active articulator. And then we have what are called the passive articulators, which just simply means it's the tube itself. So the top of the palate, that's the top of your mouth, which is called the palate, that is called an articulator because actually, as you'll discover in a moment, your tongue, when you're speaking, your tongue is articulating, and it's not only jumping around, but it's also occasionally touching other surfaces, and that has acoustic consequences, which generates all kinds of weird and amazing sounds, which are all the different sounds that go into all the different languages that are possible in the world. We'll have a whole other lecture on different languages and how that all works. For now, we're just concentrating on this process and how it functions. Okay, so I probably said all this. That's the main source of energy. The larynx is the main source of sound. And the tongue is the main source of articulation. In other words, changing the sound in some controlled way. What we have here now is airflow. So how fast you breathe out, the pressure you put in, is going to affect the sound as well. So if you breathe out rather slowly, with not a lot of energy, you can speak very quietly. Nobody can hear what you're saying. But if you put a lot of energy into your voice, which you probably even noticed I had to breathe in before I did that, take a lot of air in and force it out fast, that's how we can speak loudly. So that's how we control things. We're controlling airflow. The larynx is very interesting indeed. It's a complex structure. We'll see some examples of it in close-up detail in a moment. But the most important thing from the point of view of the sound is it's basically a buzzer. It generates a buzz-like sound. And the reason that's important, as opposed to a whistle, let's say, like a bird's syrinx, which generates something a bit more like a whistle, it's a bit more like a sine wave, the larynx in a human being, or indeed in a mammal, generates a signal which is much more has much more structure to it, and in particular has a lot of harmonics. So we hear the pitch of the voice, but as we'll see in a minute, there are lots of energy at the harmonics of the pitch of the voice, and that's going to matter a lot when we come to shape that with the vocal cavity, the oral cavity itself. So it's a harmonic rich buzz, and the fundamental frequency is basically, as it says here, decided by the body size. So a big person tends to have a lower frequency vibration in their larynx, and an elephant, which is another mammal, its larynx vibrates at about 10 hertz, which is below human hearing. You basically feel an elephant's rumble, but it's the same process. Likewise, a mouse which squeaks very, very high frequency, but it's the same process. It's a mammal, it has a larynx, and it's just that because it's very small, then it's generating very high frequency sounds. The point of all this that I'm trying to make clear is that there's a direct relationship, which we can model, between the physiology and the acoustic consequences, which allows us to build models and build algorithms to simulate some of this stuff. Okay, now, so I mentioned that the link with the tubes last week is that the oral cavity is essentially a tube. Your tongue is dancing around, changing the shape of the tube, which means that those neat harmonics that I mentioned last week, do you remember I said a simple tube has a fundamental frequency and then resonance at the first harmonic, the second harmonic, the third harmonic, all very neat and very nicely arranged. When you go away from a uniform tube to something where you've got maybe a lot of cavity at the back and not much at the front, depending on what your tongue is doing, you're moving these resonances around quite independently. You've gone away from the simple regular model to something much more interesting. So that's what you're doing with your tongue. You're changing the resonant frequencies of this cavity, and you're essentially independently moving those harmonics about. We'll see all this. I'll be going all over this again several times in this lecture. Again, those resonances are a function of body size. So, for example, a very small child, not only does a child have a high pitch because they have a small larynx, but you can also hear just from their voice itself that they have a small vocal, a small oral cavity. Okay, there's a direct relationship, as we saw last week, between the length of the tube and the resonances. So if we have a very small tube, we have high resonances, and then we stick a tongue in there, changing them as well. Okay, so that's kind of what's going on with the human anatomy. All right, so let's look at a bit more detail here then. So now we've got a slice through that way, we're labelling all the key points, and we've got an animation there just showing that airflow is occurring. So what I'm going to concentrate on right now is the voice source. You remember when we were talking about the tubes, we distinguished between the source of energy, the excitation, that which is putting energy into the system, and the filter. So this is the voice source in speaking, the larynx. Okay, so this is what the larynx looks like. So this is now looking down somebody's throat, taking a picture of the vocal folds or vocal cords. This is a good point for me to say eventually there's going to be some quizzes, and they are vocal cords, C-O-R-D, not vocal cords, C-H-O-R-D. Nothing connected with music here. So don't make spelling mistakes, which Mole will automatically take away a mark. But vocal folds is a safer word. So those are the vocal folds. So these are some cartilage, which are held together, and air is forced through, and they vibrate to generate this kind of buzzy sound. So, I think I've said most of that. Basically, the process, there's a picture of a balloon there to remind me that the process is basically like this. So here's some lungs. I'm going to put some air in the lungs. These have been sitting for a year. Trying to get some air in these lungs. Right. So you know what I'm going to do, probably. So everybody does this at party time. So there's some air in the lungs, and I'm now going to force that air out between some vocal cords. Come on. That is exactly the process. When you're making a noise with your larynx, that's exactly what's going on. Precisely as what was happening in the collar there, I was putting in some tension which was holding them together. You force the air through, and what actually happens is a Bernoulli effect, and the cords actually are like this. So as you force the air through, it goes like this, and then it releases it in a sort of bubble and then comes back together again. So it's a kind of only it's going for a male about 140 times a second. Okay, so you're just blowing air through, but the sound, somebody was asking me before we came in, You know, like, where's the sound coming from? The sound is coming from energy being put into the system. So it's not the puff of air, it's the slapping together of those vocal cords. And that's happening very, very regularly. Okay, so again, that's what's going on down here. So when you hear that sound, even though it's harmonic rich, which means that it's not a sine wave, it's not a pure tone, it obviously has a timbre, which means that it has energy at different frequencies, but what you perceive as the pitch, so when someone's singing, or the pitch of the voice is related to the fundamental frequency of that vibration. Now this, I'm using this term fundamental frequency in harmonics. Again, last week we were talking about tubes, and now I'm talking about something else, which is a vibration of the vocal cords. Different systems will have fundamental frequencies and harmonics. And it's very easy to get completely confused between the fact that we've got a sound source and a sound filter, both of which have a fundamental frequency, and both of which have harmonics. Okay, so I just point that out. That is potentially quite confusing, but just be aware that different acoustic systems, when resonating or when generating sound, can, if they're repetitive signals, they can be described by a fundamental frequency and harmonics. So, but we've got two systems here. Okay. Right. I think I've said pretty much all of that. So we've got harmonic-rich sound. Okay, so here's an example. I found this. This is the slide I added. Here are four singers, and we're going to put a camera down their throats. Now, this is pretty horrible. Look away if you don't like this. It's going up the nose. There's four of them. We're going to go right through. This is exactly how it's done. Right, it's a pretty horrible procedure. And we arrive at the same picture we had just now, which is where we're going to see all four sets of vocal cords. There they are. So this, I don't know if it's called an endoscope or something, it's gone up the nose, down the back of the throat, and it's looking at the top of the vocal cords. Now, what you should be looking at is how they're being controlled. They're held open for breathing. They're going to be held tightly to... Right, we could look at that for a long time, I'm sure. So look it up on YouTube, you've got the link there. But basically I just wanted to show you them actually in action by some people who have, of course, expert control over the tension in their vocal cords and their cords, vocal folds, and therefore able to generate very precise frequencies. That's what a singer is able to do, right? They have very good control over the tension in the muscles here, and what I was sort of doing with the balloon, they can do that very, very accurately. Okay, so let's just come at that again. Here's a very simple image, just to prove the point I made about how the air sort of bubbles through. So we've got two cycles of this. I played a couple of times. Okay, if I go back and do it again. Right, so that's obviously high-speed photography. That's really slowed down. It's all happening much faster than that, but it just shows. This is, you know, so scientists studied this probably 100 years ago, trying to figure out what's going on. Okay, so what's going on is we have this interruption in the airflow. If you hold your vocal cords apart, just breathe out, right? You need to hold them together to generate some sound. And if you do that, you get this Bernoulli effect, you get this opening and closing. And here is the airflow. So you can see that the shape of the airflow is interesting. There's a rise in the airflow, and then there's a corner. Do you see that corner at the glottal closure? That's where the things slap back together again. And that is where most of the sound energy is going into the system. It's at that moment. It's happening repeatedly, so every 10 milliseconds or so here, that's 100 hertz tone, means that the vocal cords are banging against each other 100 times a second, roughly speaking. Okay? That's what's going on. Now, how do we know all that? Because scientists have developed instrumentation. There's something called a laryngograph, which is a very simple sensor which you strap on your neck, just as you can see in the picture there, and it measures the impedance. You have two sensors, one either side of the larynx. You measure the impedance, and obviously when the vocal folds are touching, the impedance is lower than when they're apart. And that allows us to essentially directly measure, rather than just the acoustics, but to directly measure the physical action of the vocal folds. And that's what's known as the LX waveform. Okay, so that's a laryngograph, a specially designed instrument precisely for making that measurement. So here's a plot then of, this is from a company called Laryngograph Limited, who make these instruments. And on the top, what you're seeing is the sound waveform of somebody going, ah, but it's recorded out here. Whereas on the bottom, you're seeing the recording from the laryngograph. So this is measuring what's actually happening with the vocal cords. So you can clearly see that what's happening at the vocal cords is in some sense simpler, because we've just got the vibrating vocal cords. But by the time the sound is out here, we've got a lot of influence from the tubes, which we'll be coming to later. Okay? Well, we can hear this. So this is actually a professor from University College London. So the first thing you'll hear is him saying, ah, and it's the recording which is just out here in a regular place where you'd put a microphone.
Ah.
Okay, not very exciting. But the next thing you'll hear is a recording from the laryngograph. So this is listening to only the vocal cords. Right? So what you should immediately notice, it doesn't really sound like speech down here, surprise, surprise. Okay? So the vowel, the R sound, is obviously taking that buzz, but adding some information in the oral cavity. And these are the resonances that we were talking about last week. Okay? So let me just, to be clear, play those again. And you can really hear that is a buzz. It just sounds like a buzz. That's the sound, that's the energy that's going into the system. Okay, I'm not going to run this because I had a bit of trouble with my computer just beforehand and it crashed everything. So please run up this example at your leisure, and if you can get a hold of a microphone as opposed to just your laptop microphone, press the microphone here. Just compare what you see in the waveform. This is using WS Pro. So just compare microphone out here and microphone. You need to press it quite hard against here to only pick up this, because if it's a little bit away, you'll get sound coming around from the front. Okay? But just to prove yourself. And so there we see, if I was able to do that, which I'm not going to risk, you see the waveform very much like the one that we described. And that's measured on my voice. And what we also see, so the top is the waveform, the bottom is the spectrum, so energy at different frequencies, and we see a fundamental frequency, which is the lowest and highest peak, and you can also see that there are pitch harmonics. There's energy at multiples of that low frequency, and that's why it sounds like a buzz as opposed to a sine wave. A sine wave only has energy at one frequency, but this has energy at multiples of the fundamental, so it sounds buzzy. Okay, now the fact that there's energy at these harmonics is going to be really important for what's coming next. Okay, right, I will run this. So that's how we can analyse the voice, and we can do that in PD, and you can do that at your leisure, but we can also, using the principles that I just talked about, we can build a synthesizer. We can create a piece of code which essentially mimics exactly what I just described and generate that buzz. So there is an example in the file. Hopefully everybody's now downloaded the zip file with all the PD stuff in it. Can't find this. This goes so tiny when it's on the screen. It's like 4-point font or something. Where is it? Pitch pulse generator. There we go. So this is a simple piece of PD. And what we have here is the key thing in this piece of code is what's called a phasor. Now, last week we saw an oscillator which was generating a sine wave. The phasor in PD is generating a triangle wave. Okay, so it's just a ramp and then it drops back. It's a ramp and then drop back. So that's a repetitive signal. And then there's various, it's very difficult to see, but if you look at the example later, there's various shaping which is turning that into the shape of the typical vocal cord vibration. So if I do this, we now are synthesizing the operation of the vocal cords, and if I change the frequency, okay, very, very straightforward. I got the microphone off, right. And if I run up WS probe, so we can look at this signal, there's the shape exactly as the vocal cord should be. Well, not surprisingly, I programmed it to do that, right? By shaping the ramp, we've turned it into this lovely vocal cord-like waveform. And notice that just as in the real speech example taken down here, we've got a lovely harmonic spectrum. The lowest one, the highest one, is the fundamental frequency. That's what you're hearing as the pitch. And then all those beautiful harmonics are giving that buzzy tone. Okay, making it sound buzzy as opposed to a pure tone. So there's a piece of code that's generating what's going on down here in your larynx, or modelling what's going on down in your larynx. Okay. Now, there are some people who, unfortunately, have lost their larynx, either through illness or often it's through cancer. Smokers in particular have to have the larynx taken away. How can they then speak? They have no means for generating the sound. Well, luckily, engineers came up with a solution, which is all we need is a buzz, right? And here is a buzzer. This is actually an electrolarynx. There are many of these around, but this is a particularly well-known one. It's just a buzzer, slight change in frequency if I press harder, and if I could not use my vocal cords, then all I have to do is push this here. You can. Oh, good, because it's very hard for yourself. So all I was doing was putting a harmonic-rich buzz into my vocal tract, slightly better than me flicking it like I was last week, and then shaping the sound using the oral cavity. Okay, clear? Very clear? Good. Right. Okay, so...
when the sunlight strikes raindrops in the air.
Okay, so this is an example, in case mine didn't work. All right. Okay, so that's all about the source for the moment. Let's move up then to where a lot of the action is, which is in the filter. So this is now, the first part was all about putting energy into the system. The second part now is all to do with the tubes, and it's how we're going to shape that energy in interesting ways. Okay? And we already heard about, we've got the tongue and the lips and all these things are moving about. So, I think I've said most of this. It is a tube, therefore it resonates, but it's not a simple tube. Because of what you're doing with your tongue, you're changing the shape of the tube, therefore you're changing the resonances. Okay, I think I've probably said all of that. Yeah, so why I kept stressing how important it is for the sound source to have a rich harmonic structure is because without that, the tube wouldn't do anything. If this was just a sine wave, the tube would just make that sine wave louder or quieter. But because this has got this rich harmonic spectrum, which gives this timbre, this buzziness, if I change the resonances of the tube, I'm going to change the whole timbre of the sound, because I'm going to enhance some harmonics and suppress other harmonics. Won't change the pitch. Whatever I do up here doesn't change the pitch, the fundamental frequency of what's going on down here, but it will change the I keep using the word timbre. Does everybody know what I mean by timbre? It's the sort of the perceived quality of the sound. Okay, so this is just a graphical illustration of what I'm talking about. So here is a harmonic-rich signal in the what we call the excitation spectrum, or the source excitation. We've got the fundamental frequency, which is highlighted in a dark blue, and a rich set of harmonics. Now we're going to stick that into a tube. The tube has resonances. Okay? The resonances mean that some of these harmonics are going to be pressed down and others will be pulled up, depending on the resonant characteristics of the tube. Said that. Right. So we have changed the shape because where the tube has this kind of resonant characteristic. Right? And that will be perceived as a completely different sound, even though the pitch will be the same, by changing the relative amplitudes of all the different harmonics. That curve is an approximation to what's going on, and so we call that the smooth envelope spectrum. Now, we have in this field a special word to refer to the resonances of the human vocal tract, of a mammalian vocal tract. And that special word is coming up now. Right. It is formant. The resonance of a vocal tract, each resonance is referred to as a formant. The lowest resonance of the vocal tract is known as the first formant. The next resonance is known as the second formant. Theoretically, there is an infinite number of resonances, and therefore there's an infinite number of formants. In practice, only the first two or three really matter for speech perception. Yeah, question.
Are these resonances multiples of...
No. Okay. No, they are now completely independent. So this is where I said just now there's a possibility of getting confused between fundamental and harmonics. But the fundamental and harmonic of a resonant system is only simple. You can only talk in those terms when it's a uniform tube. Now we don't have a uniform tube anymore. So these resonances are now pretty much independent of each other, and they're independent of what's going on down here. So we can't really talk about fundamental and harmonics anymore. We've just got a bunch of resonances which are capable of being altered. This is quite crucial. Is everybody happy with that point? Because it is so easy to get confused because the terminology is similar. I'll take that as a yes. All right. So you get the idea there then. So we essentially say that what the oral cavity is doing is that it's altering the formant structure of the signal. In other words, it's altering the resonances. It's just that we have this special technical word which means resonance. Again, if you're doing a mole quiz, it is not format, it's formant. Okay, so don't spell it wrong, you might lose some marks. Right, so here are now some relationships between what I've just described and some pretty obvious standard speech sounds, some vowels. So this is a slice through somebody's head diagrammatically. You can see the tongue in different places, and we've got all the different sort of typical vowels in a language like English. So the top left, we've got heed. Okay? So notice the tongue in heed. If you make that, feel free to make the sound. Can you feel your tongue is really pushed quite high up? Right? And the consequence is, on the spectrum there, is we've got one resonance which is quite low, then a sort of a big hole, and then a couple of resonances which are higher up. Next one is hid. Head, had, hod, hoard, hood, and hood. Okay? Now, if you go through that, you realize you're moving your tongue around in an interesting way, and you're changing the resonances, as we can see there, and that is generating these different vowel sounds. That's what it means to use these different vowels. We're moving our tongues, changing the resonances, and therefore changing the perceived sound to fit these different vowels. Okay, so let's prove that. by joining a few things together. So I had a student a couple of years ago who very kindly 3D printed some standard shapes. So here's my electrolarynx. Oh, first of all, let's not do that. Let's do this. Remember this guy from last week? So before I was... But now I can do this. Now, you notice now we've got a nice, clear, clean signal. Do you recognize that vowel? In fact, when you make that what's called the neutral vowel, your vocal tract is pretty much a uniform tube. Right? But for all other vowels, you're distorting it from that neutral uniform position. I can also do what I did before. Okay? What were my fingers then? They were the lips. Okay? Right, but anyway, back to my student. So, Reese made 3D printed a bunch of different shapes. So this is a particular sound, can't read it. So basically, we've got the larynx. So this is the bottom, and we're coming right through. So it's slightly bigger at the back, and then open again at the front. So that's a particular vowel sound. Pick another one, it's a completely different shape. So this is just representing what the shape that the tongue is making inside the vocal tract. So these are all sort of typical vowel sounds. Really nice E. Now remember I said your tongue was really up at the front and in that diagram? Look, how narrow. That's the front part here. Big open space at the back, narrow at the front. Makes a lovely E. I've got five of these. What's this? Oh, yeah. Sort of horrible sound. And see how open that is and how open this is. You open your cavity, you open your lips, and you get a nice sound. Brilliant. Okay, that all worked. Okay, right. Now, these are all static sounds. But, of course, when we're speaking, we're not oohing and aahing at people, usually. We are doing all this dynamically. So this is some MRI footage from a pal of mine at USC in California. So what we've got, again, is a slice through somebody's head. But in real time, they're going to be speaking. So I want you to, hopefully you can figure out, you can see where the tongue is. You see the lips and you can see the tongue. But I want you to watch the amazing gymnastics that your articulators go through when you're just speaking. Here we go, there's two examples.
She had her dark suit in greasy wash water all year.
So did you notice the lips are coming together, the tongue is jumping around. It's not just jumping around, it's changing shape. The tip is doing interesting things. I'll play it again if you like.
She had her dark suit in greasy wash water all year.
And the second one.
Don't ask me to carry an oily rag like that.
So this is what kids have to learn how to do. They have to learn how to control this muscle, make it dance around, changing the resonances, changing the sounds, and learning to speak. Now, I couldn't resist this. This was done by some friends of mine at University College. Speaking is not the only thing we do, and making speech-like noises is not the only thing we can do with our voice. I gave you an example last week. So this is some beatboxing. And again, just look at the amazing things that are going on inside the vocal tract. Right. I don't know if I have time for this because I think I lost the website. If you want to have a bit of fun, go to this website. This is a real-time synthesis of various sounds. It's very, very neat idea. Basically, we're looking at the head this way now. But you can, in real-time, control on your browser what the tongue is doing and various other things, and generate all kinds of amazing sounds. It's a huge amount of fun. Had a project student last year programming all this in PD, by the way, which works quite nicely. But this is the original on the website. I don't really have time for that. Okay, and I don't have time for this again because of the crashing problem. But if you put a microphone here, you should see just the excitation signal, the very simple signal, the buzz, and you should see its harmonics. But if you have the microphone out here, then you will see something much more interesting. And what we've got is a complex waveform on the top, and if you look at the bottom, you can still see the harmonics of the pitch, of the vocal cord vibration, but you can also see that now, whereas before they were just a simple progression, getting quieter and quieter, they're now being shaped by the vocal tracts. So this is a microphone out here, and those peaks in the spectrum where the harmonics are being enhanced, those are the resonant frequencies, which, and we have the special word, they are the formants. And as we speak, those formants are sort of moving around independently. Okay, so play around with that at home. But what I can do, because this will work, is I can synthesize. I've already showed you the synthesizer for the vocal cords, so I'm now going to feed that through some resonances. We had a simulation of the resonances last week, but for tubes. So simple idea again, just to put that buzz through some resonances, and let's see what happens. Speech generator. So the larynx is over here on the left, same controls as before, but here we've got the first two resonances. The sliders are controlling the frequencies of these first two resonances. In other words, it's controlling the first two formants. And you can see the ranges. So if I vary this, you can see that the first resonance goes from whatever it was, 280 to 710 hertz. Default was 500. Whereas the second resonance is going from 870 hertz up to 2250 hertz. Okay, so these are two resonances, and they're going to shape the buzz that comes from the artificial larynx. Okay, so here we go. So it doesn't sound too much like speech at this point, because it's just a signal sound. I can change the fundamental. Okay, but I can also now change these resonances, and I can change them independently. Now this all sounds very synthetic, doesn't it? And that's because it's such a simple model. We've got a very simple buzzer, and we're feeding that into just two resonances. But nevertheless, you can hear we're generating different sound qualities, different timbres. And we're basically covering the vowel space. Now, to prove that, I'm going to... It was very tedious having two sliders. I can't control them together. I had to do them independently. What I really want to do is to be in a two-dimensional space for those two parameters. And we can do that using the graphics package in PD, which is GEM. So I don't know if anybody's got as far as playing with this, but here comes GEM. And there's the bit of code. This is a GEM window. And... you can see it's tracking where I am, but basically I've removed the sliders and I've linked them to the 2D position in the GEM window. So as I move around, I will be essentially just moving those sliders jointly. So let's hear it. That's not good. Oh no, that's right. Yeah, I stopped it making noises without me clicking. So if I go in the middle, good. Right, so I can go to the extremes. But now let me move around dynamically. And if I was really clever, I should be able to say, how are you? Did you get that? Let's do that again. How are you? All I'm doing is moving two resonances around. The buzz didn't change, it was just a fixed frequency, but I was moving the resonances and you could hear the different vowels, and even generated a little bit of speech there, if you like. Simple model, play with this at home. It's quite good fun. Right, let's... just want to leave this in a tidy way, because PD sometimes objects. Right, I think we're on track. Yeah, so I just showed you that. Right, now I've been going on and on about the larynx and the excitation, the sound source. Is this the only place that sound is injected into the system? Question for you guys. There's a big space underneath. So the answer is no. No, it's not. Okay. You can generate sound anywhere in the vocal tract. It's just that this is a really rather important one. But what happens when I'm going shh or s or nothing is happening down here. Not a thing. I'm generating sound in other places by doing other things, right? So we can excite a resonance. So whistle is an example. That's not the vocal cords. If I whistle, that is actually the second resonance. And I'm causing the second resonance to resonate by a little bit of airflow generating some turbulence. Okay? I could vibrate an articulator. This is always a fun one. Okay. Or I can release a blockage. As in... Right? Basically creating a little explosion. And when we're speaking, we're doing all of this. And some languages have very exotic sounds in them, which we'll come to in another lecture. So there's lots of ways of generating sound. This is not the only place. But this is like the most important place. So all these other things are happening too. Now, you may remember from the last lecture, I talked about different types of sound source, repetitive, noisy, and impulsive. Well, we've got the same kind of story here. Speech scientists refer to the different sounds, which are generated in different ways, using technical terms. So if the vocal cords are vibrating, it is a voiced sound, right? Vocal cords are vibrating, that means... there is voicing, which means it is a voiced sound. So any sound where these are not vibrating is an unvoiced sound. So shh is an unvoiced sound. S is an unvoiced sound. But if I do s and switch on my vocal cords, s, z, I get a z. So z is a voiced sound, whereas s is an unvoiced sound. Okay? Fricative, such as shh, these are turbulent flow and are known as fricatives. And anything which is a kind of explosion, like a p, t, k, b, d, g, these occur after a blockage and they are known as plosives. Okay? Just technical words that are used to describe the different sounds. All right, so let's do this real quick. We've got minus 1 minute to do this. So these are English words, and I just want you to think about voicing for a moment. So which of these words end in a voiced sound? So bus. Is that voiced at the end? No. Thank you. That is correct. Breathe. I'm really exaggerating. Breathe. The answer is yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. Good. Now, by the way, for all the non-native speakers of English here, you're starting to see, and this is going to continue over the next lectures, the disassociation between spelling and pronunciation. So prepare yourself. Don't be bamboozled by the spelling. Listen to your voice. So let me exaggerate this one. Has. Yes or no?
Yes.
Yes. Off. No. Buzz. Yes. Now, we had breathe. Now this is breath. Breath. That's what I'm seeing now. Here's a weird one. Rule. All. All. Vocal cords vibrate. All you have to do is put your hand here. Rule. Yes. And of. Remember we had off. Now we've got of. Yes, no?
Yes.
Correct. Okay. Fricatives. Which of these end in fricatives? Bus. Fricative. Turbulent sound. Bus. Yes. Breathe. Does it end in a fricative sound? Is there turbulence? Oh, I'm hearing a mixture of... I'll take your response, because it's correct. Hat. Is that fricative sound at the end? No, that's a plosive, right? Off. Off. Yes. Good. Bun. Bun. Fricative at the end? No, I'm seeing a few no's. Teeth. Yes. Rule. And of. Yes. It is. Yeah. Okay, and finally, which of these start with a plosive? So this is an explosion, right? So, bus. Yes. Give. Give. The thing is, can you hold it and then release it? Give. So it's definitely an explosion, right? So it's a plosive sound. Has. No. Well done. Sat. Nope, it's not. No, there's no explosion there. It's just it could be a continuous sound. Pull, pull. Yes, very loud. Yes, good. Teeth. Yes. Rule. Ooh, ooh. Rule. It's not an explosion. And cough. Yes. Another nice example of the difference between. No, we'll come to that. Yeah, okay. Ignore that. Right. Okay. So, in the last minus 3 minutes, here's a waveform for an entire utterance. And I just want to draw attention to various things. So we saw waveforms last time. These are sound pressure waves. So this is part of Bricks Fell Over. And what we can see is at the first part, at the top left there, top right there, we've got a noisy signal. That's the S. And then as the vocal cords start to vibrate, as we go into the air of fell, so we start to see regular vibrations. That means the vocal cords have started. Okay? Well, then we're basically seeing a repetitive pattern, and each repeat is a slapping together of the vocal cords. So that's why we're going to be hearing a voiced sound at that point. That's frication at the top. I already mentioned in the wrong order. And if we do that using WS Probe, you can look at your own voice and you can basically study the noises you make and the consequences for the waveform and the spectrum. And I recommend you do that at your leisure. Okay, so this is where I want to finish this particular lecture. Amazingly, in only 40 minutes, we've put together pretty much all we need to actually model the human voice almost completely. Because we've got these two systems, I've given the main parameters down here, which is the frequency and its buzziness. The main parameters are up here, these formant resonances, and there's a few other things to do with when noises occur. And that will allow us to build a complete speech synthesizer from first principles. So there are many different ways of doing speech synthesis, and the most common out there right now is just taking waveforms and cutting and splicing them. But to generate speech from first principles is in some sense a much more interesting thing to do. And way back in 1983, a pal of mine, John Holmes, built a what's called a parallel formant synthesizer. So you know the word formant now. You don't need to worry about why it's called a parallel formant synthesizer. It's just a speech synthesizer which is essentially modeling the vibration of the vocal cords and the resonances of the vocal tract. It's got 12 parameters. Some of them are more important than the others. The 12 parameters are specified once every 10 milliseconds, and that is enough to drive this synthesizer to speak.
I'm going to synthesize the noise of several trumpets.
So this is what John Holmes was famous for. I forgot to introduce that, but that's two recordings. One is a person speaking. The other is a parallel format synthesizer configured to model that person's voice. I no longer know which is which. They're basically identical, and that's what this guy became famous for, because he showed that with only 12 parameters, every 10 milliseconds, you could mimic precisely a particular voice. And this is a really important thing to know. Okay? So, it looks like this. You'll notice things like F1, F2 resonators. So these are formants, sort of stuff that you've seen already. We've got voiced excitation at the bottom there. That's the simulation of here. The voiceless excitation at the top is just a noise source. It's like me blowing. Okay? And that's the basic structure. But what I'm getting to is I have a PD version of that, and so do you in your zip file. So we're going to finish off by playing the home speech synthesizer driven by a text file which just contains 12 numbers every 10 milliseconds. So we turn it on, we get the text file, which is in downloads here, and I'll put it on loop, and we're going to process the file. And what you're going to hear now is speech being generated from first principles using everything that I've just taught you, and it's just driven from a simple text file specifying those parameters every 10 milliseconds.
The Marlin Pussycat went to sea in a beautiful evening boat. They took some honey and plenty of money, wrapped up in 5 pound note. The owl looked up to the stars above and sang to a small guitar. From lovely pussy to pussy, my love, what a beautiful pussy you are, you are. What a beautiful pussy you are.
Right. So, just to be clear, that was not a recording. That was synthesized from first principles. Hopefully everybody understood it. It was not human-like, full human quality, because this is just a simple PD approximation. But, nevertheless, it shows the power of our understanding, and it shows the power of what PD can do. And with that, we have arrived at the end of this lecture, slightly later than intended, but it always is. So these are all the things we covered, right? So we've basically been through the whole process of speaking, and we will start again in only a couple of minutes, and we're going to start looking at the other side, hearing. I'll give you 5 minutes, so I'll start a few minutes late just to give everybody a chance to breathe. Oh, that's you, was it? Your email, right.
Yeah, I watched the recording for the second part of the last lecture, and